Vaults are most often the repositories of money, legal documents, or personal effects, but there may be nothing more valuable to put in a vault than seeds for the crops that feed humanity. This week, the government of Norway started building an underground vault that will hold millions of seeds, the most complete collection in the world. Construction is underway on the remote territory of Svalbard, close to the North Pole. For one American, this vault is the culmination of a lifelong and controversial campaign. Dan Charles reports.
The ceremony launching the seed vault was a thoroughly Nordic affair. The wind numbed your fingers. Behind Norway's prime minister, you could see snow-covered mountains. Then a lean, sandy-haired man in his mid-50s stepped to the microphone, and the soft accents of western Tennessee echoed across the rocky mountainside.
I suppose the time comes in everyone's life, and indeed in the life of governments, when we ask, what is our legacy going to be?
The seed vault is at least partly the legacy of this man, Kerry Fowler, executive director of the Global Crop Diversity Trust, based in Rome. 30 years ago, Fowler was just out of college. The son of a Tennessee judge and grandson of a farmer, he became fascinated by the price of agricultural progress. Farmers around the world were abandoning traditional kinds of rice, wheat, and corn, instead planting the products of modern science, new seeds that produced bigger harvests.
If you're driving in the countryside and you see millions of individual plants of wheat out there, you don't think that wheat's going to become extinct anytime soon.
But Fowler points out all those plants are genetically identical. And being identical, they are identically vulnerable, whether to disease, drought, or insects. He dug deeper and discovered that the genetic diversity that used to exist in fields now can only be found in refrigerated rooms called gene banks. There's one, for instance, outside Mexico City at CIMMYT, the International Center for Improvement of Wheat and Maize, which is another word for corn.
Okay, we're going to go into the CIMMYT gene bank right now, the gene bank vault. You have to go through a number of doors here with secret codes.
Thomas Payne is one of CIMMYT's senior gene bankers. He enters an underground vault chilled to 0 degrees Fahrenheit. It's filled with shelves holding jars and bags of seeds.
This room contains over 100,000 different wheat varieties and about 30,000 maize varieties. The maize varieties come from here in Mexico and Central America.
Many of the wheat seeds come from the Fertile Crescent, where farmers first grew wheat in present-day Iraq, Iran, and Turkey. In CIMMYT's greenhouse, the full diversity of this collection is on display.
There's wheats that are as tall as I am. I'm 6 feet 4 inches tall. There are wheats that are short. There are wheats that have dark-colored stems, light-colored heads, light-colored stems.
What you can't see is more important, genes that plant breeders can use to create new, better plant varieties. Kerry Fowler ended up devoting his life to preserving this genetic diversity and free access to it. And even though he's a polite and mild-mannered fellow, that put him right in the middle of some angry international arguments. In the beginning, as an activist at the Rural Advancement Fund in North Carolina, he attacked American seed companies. They were pushing hard for patents on seeds and plant varieties. That amounted to genetic imperialism, Fowler argued. The companies were claiming genetic treasure, trying to profit from plants that farmers in Asia and Latin America had developed over many generations. But Fowler didn't foresee where that argument would lead. In the 1980s, many third world governments adopted genetic protectionism. They said unless they were paid, they'd share none of their seeds and plants. Here's Ethiopian official Tewolde Berhan making the case a few years ago.
The industrialized countries want to take genetic resources and patent them. We want something out of those resources.
Fowler was appalled.
That is dangerous. That's really dangerous to take a resource like this and restrict its use, I think, immoral.
So Fowler's second battle started with third world governments. He recalls one particularly blunt conversation with the Minister of Agriculture from one African country. This was during the mid-1990s when Fowler was working for the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization.
He said, I just want to tell you that my country has hundreds of millions of dollars worth of genetic resources. I said, do you want my advice about what to do with them? He said, well, yes. I said, good, sell them.
Fowler was being ironic. The fact is, he told the minister, no one's going to pay for access to your small piece of the gene pool. You'll just hurt yourself, cutting your own farmers off from other gene banks. Fowler had moved to Norway by this time, where he's a university professor. He also had transformed himself from activist to insider, from critic to deal broker. And the third act of his personal drama became working out a ceasefire in the seed battles that he'd helped instigate in the first place. Just last week in Madrid, negotiators sealed a deal. From now on, third world governments will share most of their seeds freely, and companies that use them will pay royalties into an international fund for gene banks. It was a personal triumph for Kerry Fowler, and so was the groundbreaking ceremony 2 days later for the Svalbard Seed Vault.
A facility inside a mountain near the North Pole, where the most valuable natural resource on Earth can be securely conserved. This is really a wonderful day.
15 years ago, Fowler opposed a similar proposal to build a big seed vault here. It looked too much like a gene grab by rich countries, he thought. It's different today, he says. The seeds in this vault will be a heritage for all to share. For NPR News, this is Dan Charles.